So welcome everybody, this is the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices webcast, and this time we have two MVPs in the session, and we're going to talk about JavaScript accessing Graph, Microsoft Graph, in the context of this quick contact sample, which is one of the PMP samples released in the April 2016 release. With me today we have Stefan Bauer and Waldek Mastukarch, and I'll let the guys do their introductions one by one as well. But so let's actually get on going. So Stefan, do the intros.
Thank you, Vesa. My name is Stefan Bauer. I'm MVP for Office Development, and I work in Austria as an information architect. And yeah, I helped Waldek on the sample to get the design to look nicely in this contact sample.
Stefan is the designer guy. You can actually do development as well, but the design and the usability is really close to your heart.
Yeah, that's true.
and let's move to Waldek. Quick intro, as man. I can see the title is The Man.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Yeah, and actually, you spelled my name wrong. It's actually RZ at the end, but it doesn't matter. Hi, everyone. My name is Waldek Mastukarch. I am The Man, as you can see on the deck. I am Office Development MVP. I work as a senior developer at Rancor. And this time around, I build the sample that we are going to show you.
Excellent. So let's get actually going. I'll leave the guys lead the presentation, and then I'm going to ask random questions whenever needed. But I think Stefan will start with the slides, and then we'll move to the demo with Waldek. So Stefan, take it away.
Okay, so the first thing we'll like to show you is how we did our development. So we had two separate projects to build the Office UI's Office contact sample. So one was my design project where I did all the style guiding stuff and sketched out how the application should work. For that I used Yeoman, the normal web app generator there. And it comes with built-in SAS support to pre-compile the CSS files, and I developed the user experience as well in this project. On the other hand, Waldek did the application part of the sample, and he used GeoOffice and Angular.js for all the front-end development, and able to connect to the Office Graph and Search REST API that we used in our sample. So, when we started to develop the sample, we started in parallel implementation. So, while Waldek set up the quick contact sample from a technical perspective, I developed in my application the style guide. And the benefit of this was we were able to, I handed Waldek the HTML structure, how this application should look like and how it should work, and also the CSS, and we haven't had to change anything inside the application part. So what came out of my style guide goes, Waldek integrated directly in the application part. And every time there was some changes in the CSS, for example, was required, I did it first in the style guide and then moved it over to the application. It was a really nice and fluid way to build the sample up pretty quick. Because Waldek, on the one hand, had no problem with the user interface and how it works. And from my perspective, from my part, I don't have to worry how this code integration with the Office Graph and Angular stuff works like. So it was really a good approach to develop this. First, when I built up the style guide with the buttons, I did a little research on how big the buttons actually should be. And so I found a nice documentation by Microsoft that states the minimum size on a touch-enabled device should be at least 7 millimeters, and the optimal size for buttons that you have on a touch-enabled device should be 11 millimeters. So what I did here, or what you see here, is on the left side, this little square is exactly 7 millimeter big reference square, and then I build up the icons in different sizes and try to find what actually the best matching icon size will be to the reference square. In the implementation, I used a 7mm directly inside CSS because it's a valid value in CSS. You shouldn't use it on normal displays, but when you do implementation that requires exactly height of 7mm, then you can add this as a really working value into your CSS file and then translate it to pixel or EM or whatever you like. Once I found the correct size of the icons, I built some buttons, and there were two different flavors in our style guide. So one was the hyperlink button that you see on the left, because when you click on a when you like to dial it, there is a hyperlink shortcut for that. So we need to have the same design for hyperlinks, and as well on the right side, sometimes in application it's better to use a button instead of a hyperlink. And so we built both look the same way, but use completely different HTML structure in the back. As I previously said, there's a good reference how to make a user interface touch enabled, which was originally published by Microsoft. It can be found in Windows 8 touch guidance. And what they did there, they researched how big a button needs to be that the error, the missing tabs are really don't occur not that often. So, and what you see here is with 7mm, you just have of 100 clicks, you just miss one tap on the device, and it gets better if it when the controls that you have in your user interface become bigger. What they also did, they researched how big the index finger is, because normally on touch device we use an index finger to, for example, execute a search query or something like that. And what they found out, or what their research showed, that the average index finger size is 11mm width. Smaller is more, smaller fingertip sizes do have children, and if you're a basketball player, you probably have more than 20mm size of your fingertip. The next thing we did was we sketched out our text elements in the style guide. So I just put up a persona title and then the persona function, which should be a little more lighter text than a smaller one. And then we assembled everything together to this persona card list item. What you see, the size of the image that you see before the name and the function actually was defined by the size of the buttons in this persona card or list overview. And what we also did is we like to transform this list item directly inside the context of the search result to a larger persona card element that you see here. So we have here some actions that you can close the contact and then it reduces the size just to the list item again. Or you have here your quick actions like call someone, Skype someone, write an email. And this was all built with the same HTML structure in the backend. We just triggered this transformation from the list item to the big card, persona card item, just by using CSS transitions and by assigning a single CSS class to the actual list element, or removed it when we have to transform the card's design back to the list item.
So Stefan, you might be coming back on this one in a second, but looking into the, and this is a good slide as well, looking into the UI or the pictures, is this using the UI fabric then? Or are this just completely custom stuff?
Actually not. We did a lot of research. I used a lot of references from the Office UI fabric stuff, but the problem is that we wanted to have a real smooth transition from the list item to the cart item, actually. And in the Office UI Fabric, there are currently two different type of user components. So it's not that easy to transform it from the list item to a big cart item. So what we had to do there is to completely rebuild all the HTML structure behind to make this transition happen with additional JavaScript. This is more error prone than the way we did it, because we, as I said, we just had to assign a single CSS class, a Starship class to our elements, and then the transition happened by magic, you know?
Yep.
And yeah, but we, for example, the blue we took from the Office UI fabric, we took some things like the font sizes from there, but built it really individual for this sample application.
Yep, makes sense.
And then another thing perhaps worth mentioning is that the UI that we have built is actually optimized for touch. Right, it's big. It has actually the right size to use it with your hand, whereas Office UI Fabric is more built for using with mouse. Right, so you couldn't really use it as easily on your phone with touch.
Yeah. And from my perspective, currently, I mean, the main focus, I think, of the Office UI Fabric was it to have a consistent user experience inside the Office application. So when you do a sidebar plugin for Word or for Excel, something like that, to have the same user experience, which is pretty good stuff to have. In our case, it was more like a custom application development because it's completely standalone outside of Office. So you should give your user and familiar user experience, but it doesn't mean naturally that it has really worked the same way that it works in Office, because everybody knows it's a individual application.
Yep.
I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Makes sense. Absolutely. Good.
Yeah. Another thing that we did in our application is we really started to test in a pretty early stage to on real devices, because when you do responsive web design or a web application like this, it's nice to have it on your desktop computer, but you only see how it really looks and feels when you use real devices. And actually, through the early stage early testing on real devices, we found some issues, for example, with iPhone, or some small style issues on a Windows phone. And for this, we use the browser Sync.io, which is actually part of the Yeoman generator for a default web application. And this is really great for cross-device testing, because you just open the website on different browsers, and then you can scroll it on every device that is attached to this website. So you get a really good quick overview what breaks on the user interface or if everything works correctly. So it's a huge benefit when you just have to use one device and control all the others and have the exact same actions on the other devices as well. Actually, through this early on device testing, we had a problem because the icons I used a more modern approach than using just an icon font, because icon fonts have some real big issues on the usability, and sometimes the icon font under some certain scenarios look completely different. So what we used in our application was a SVG symbol set that I generated out of the Office 365 icons. And as I said before, we took the icon font from Office 365, converted in a symbol set to make sure that the user see familiar icons and not use another icon font that there are so many icon fonts for mobile application development out there, but we want to have a familiar font where that user might have seen on Office 365 or wherever. Yeah, and when we used the SVG symbol set, we faced a problem because Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer doesn't support external SVG files for now. And we had stored all our SVG information in a single file. It can be compared like to have an image sprite with some GIF icons in there. And this is something that currently is not provided by Microsoft Edge, but there is a solution that is called SVG for Everybody. And what this actually does is to do a small AJAX request, read the SVG file that we put in our application, and directly integrate it at the right spot in the application. So it's really good because the script is, I think, only 50 lines long, and with the simple integration of the script or the rewriting of the icons to have the SVG information directly inside our application, we make sure that, for example, in future, when external SVG files are supported in Microsoft Edge or Internet Explorer, we just need to remove the script and we are ready to go and optimize our application that way. Yeah, and that's all for my part now. So let's take a
So let's actually move. Yeah, so let's actually move on the demo, and Valdek will be doing then the demo and showing the application in practice. So it's great to see how it actually looks like. So let's move to the demo side.
Yep. All right. So here you can see my iPhone on which I open the app. And the app that we have built is an Angular app. So that means that it's just a web page basically that you open in browser, and which allows you to use the app on any phone, even on desktop if you wish. So after you start the app, the only thing that you will see is a patent Xbox that allows you to search. And that was actually our goal, to provide users with an easy to use app that helps them find the context that they need. Right? So here, the only thing that you have to do is to type the name of the person that you are looking for. And when you're done, just press return and wait for the app to find them. And when it does, you can see the image, you can see the name and function or the job title. And then when you swipe from right to the left, you will be able to actually open the quick actions like call, Skype, email, or view profile. And that gives you really quick access to that person, because if you know who they are, you might not need to see additional info, but just quickly call them. Another option that you have is to tap a person, and then you will get the details card with additional info. So here you see the image in a big, and again you see the name, job title, email, and here you will see all email that you have recently used to communicate with that person. So it will not only be one email, but there will be all emails that you have used. And the great thing is that all of that comes from the People API in Microsoft Graph. And some additional info that you get is the phone number, profile URL. And on the right-hand side, you still get the actions like call, Skype, email, and view profile. You can close the card using the X on the right-hand side. And the great thing about the People API in Microsoft Graph is that it uses phonetic search. So even if you would misspell the name because it's coming from a region that you don't speak that well, or you just don't know how to spell the name, so imagine that we would search for Garth with an F, Garth. And when we search, Garfield. No, I don't want you to auto-complete that phone. I want to search for Garf, not Garfield. I'm not searching for Garfield in my spare time.
Why not? Come
so, on. Yeah. Well, actually, that would be a nice Easter egg to have him appear here, right? But still, so as you can see, even though I type Garf's name with an F instead of TH, I still find him as a first hit. So with that, I can still really easily access all his info. And still, if that was the other person that I have here on the list, I can still access the info or see who he or she is. So with that, let me show you how this app has been built. let me open Visual Studio Code. And the one thing that Stefan didn't say is that we both work on OS X, right? So we use Visual Studio Code and build this actually as a Angular app, right? There is no SLN, no wizard. We just use the native OS X and its flow and its tools to build this app. I won't dive into details about Angular. I assume that you know at least the basics. Instead, I'd like to take you through the whole flow, like how we use the app and which parts it uses and how the flow is. So the first thing that you do is whenever you start the app, let me get it back quickly, is that the first time you open the app, you only see the screen, right? So you're about to search. So the first thing that you do is search. And the way it works, you hit search, and this search query is being passed from the view to the controller and here to our service that actually communicates with the Microsoft Graph. So here we have the function called search for contacts, and if we go to our service here, we can see that actually it calls the graph beta URL / me people and then search query. The people API is now available in beta, and that's exactly why we used beta URL.
Quickly, just coming back on that one. So how does the application know which tenant it is actually connecting to?
So actually, yes, the thing is that whenever you build applications in Angular that communicates with the Microsoft Graph or actually Office 365, there is this library called ADAL. And ADAL has been built by Microsoft, specifically by the Azure team, and that's the library that makes it really easy for you to authenticate against AAD. So in our app, we use ADAL. That means that all of the auth flow is being already taken care of, and the only thing that we need to do is to tell ADAL which tenant we want to use. So if we go to ADAL configure, you see that we pass the app ID, SharePoint URL, and app ID is at here. So here we have all the parameters that tie this app either to a tenant, or actually, if it was a multi-tenant app, we would be able to use it with any tenant that we want, right? And here you can also say the exact URLs that we call for the graph data URL, or the search API that I will tell you more about in a moment.
Yep, makes sense. Absolutely.
Yep, makes sense. Okay, cool. So here, going back to our call, we call the people API from Microsoft Search, and the one thing that you should see is that the only thing that we get is the name, title, and email address. These are the only info that the people API offers you. But if you go back to our app, you can actually see that we actually show more, right? Because we show the image. And then when you open the person or show the additional info, you'll also see that we also offer a link to his profile page in SharePoint. So how do we do that? So actually, in order to be able to show that, we backfill the info with additional calls. So if we go back to our controller, so here we have the info about the context, right? So here we get the basic things like name, title, and email. And based on these email addresses, we actually try to get additional info from SharePoint, right? Because the people API from the Microsoft Graph shows you the contacts both internal and external, right? So there is no guarantee that the contact that you have is actually from your own org. That's one. And another thing is that you might have used multiple email addresses. So there is no guarantee for us that we will hit the right email address. Actually, the org email address the first time. So what we do here is that we loop through all the email addresses that we have, and based on them, we try to load additional info. And we do that using another function that you see here, which is called get user details. And if I show you that, you can see here that here we use another API, which is part of the Microsoft Graph, which allows us to load additional info about user in our org. So here we can, for example, the one thing that we can get from here is the photo. And we get, and the thing about it is there's a trick like how you can load that into your app. So when you get value, what you actually get is a blob. And that's exactly what you see here. But you cannot just load directly a blob on a web page. So what you need to do is to convert it to first to a resource that you can then load on a page. And depending on a browser, you either can do that using the window.url or window webkit URL function. And based on that, you call the create object URL function, which converts the blob into a resource that you can then use. And what you will get is a URL that starts with blob:// URL. Right? So it's not really URL of a page that you can browse to, but that's URL that the browser can use to access that resource that it already has in its cache, if you will. So with that, we now have the image, name, job title, and email addresses. But we also would like additional things. Oh, yeah, and we also have here phones. And the last thing that we don't have is profile URL. And that one we get from SharePoint Search. So if we go back to our page, another part that we have here is a piece of code that allows us to load profile URLs for everyone. And the thing is that for that we use search. And one way that we could go around that is to call search query for every result that we get, pass the email, and based on that, get URL or not, right? Because if that email does not exist within our org, we wouldn't get any hit. The problem with that is that if we have multiple hits, like 10 or 20, there will be quite a few calls that we would have to make. So instead, what we did, and let me show you that how it's built. Actually, what we do is that we combine all of the email addresses that we have into a single query, which you see here. So we loop through all of the emails that we have, and we concatenate them into a single string, and then we pass all of that as a single search query. So we can find profile URLs for everyone in single call. And the one trick here is that that query, it's all via REST, right? So that query, if it was a GET query, that URL might get very long, depending on number of emails and hits. And sometimes it might actually be too long for a browser to run it. So instead, just to be safe, we actually execute a POST query on which there is no limit, and we can just put the whole query inside the payload. So for that, we use POST, and we actually post the query, which we built here, into the body, which we sent with request. But before we can issue a SharePoint REST API POST request, we actually have to first have request digest, which in a way is a sort of string that proves that request that's being run is original, right? So we get the request digest here, which basically is just another AJAX POST call to the SharePoint URL /API/context-info. And based on get, we get token that we then pass into the headers of our search REST API request, which is here. And based on that, we get search request or search results. And for every hit, we get email and a path. And the path is actually the profile page URL that we get for the person. And based on the org email, we can match that to our original hit. So here, if we go back to the page, based on the email address that we get, we match that back to our hits from the Microsoft Graph, and then we add profile URL to the original result. And based on that, we can show everything about the person on one page.
So there's quite a lot of things happening on the background, obviously, but it's really neatly designed. So the UI, and obviously Stefan has worked on that quite nicely. And a lot of stuff happening in the background, but things from an end user perspective, this is really clean and simple.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, is there anything else you would like to know, or
just from a classical SharePoint developer perspective, you're using the Visual Studio Code, you're using these things which might sound terrifying, like Adel.js even might sound terrifying to some of the classic SharePoint developers, and people can see that you have Node.js or modules and JavaScript modules on the Visual Studio Code. So mm-hmm. How about that side of the development? How about that side of getting familiar of all of this tooling and all of that? So you are actually both are old school SharePoint developers as well. At least Waldeck is. From Stefan,
yeah.
I'm 100% sure.
I'm sure I am too. I did a lot of full trust code solutions in the past.
Yeah, I think that I started doing the more, if you will, web-based development about 2 years back. And the way I approached it is I bought a Mac and I am on OS X. And there are no Visual Studio and wizards there. Right, so the only way for you to actually build solutions for Office is to use Node and NPM and Gulp and Grunt and all the frameworks that have been there for quite some time, but up until now they were irrelevant. And although it's scary at first just to live in command line, at some point, what you actually see is that you get more productive than at one because there is no overhead. I mean, probably by the time you start Visual Studio, I am already done with the code here.
One thing I want to actually address on your comment, so you're seriously suggesting that every developer should be moving to Mac or? Put it this way. All of this tooling is available in the Windows side as well.
Yes,
absolutely,
yes.
You can do then development on any platform, or even Linux, which is good.
Yes. And that's actually the point. You can develop for Office everywhere now. That's not exclusive anymore to Windows, right? You can build stuff with PHP, .NET, Ruby, anything you want, including, as we hear, build a 100% client-side app. There is no server-side component here, right? It all runs in browser. And it is new, and it is a thing that you have to learn, but it is worth the effort. And actually, given the fact that more and more technologies or more development or investments go into that direction, I would recommend that you definitely take time and give this approach a try.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
On the other hand, there are many developers out there that are regular web developers that are used to use tools like Angular and so, and to learn the API for them is pretty easy. So you need to make yourself familiar with REST, which they probably already know, and then you just need to look up the documentation on the Office Graph. And so a normal web developer also can build this application too. So it's not so Office 365 SharePoint related development anymore, which I think is pretty good.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that as you said, the only thing that you have to learn is REST API, or actually the endpoints that you have to call and responses that you get. And the great thing about Microsoft Graph is that all of that is already available on the internet, right? So there is no trial and error there, because you can just go to the graph.microsoft.io site and it's all there. It says exactly which endpoints are available, which are already in prod, and which are still being developed. And based on that, you can just pick your endpoints and work against that using technology that you already know.
Makes sense. Just to avoid that the webcast goes too long, let's actually switch back on the slides. Good discussion and great demo and a great solution. I think this is a great example on the simplicity of the graph and getting access on the right information. But let's move back on the slides and close up the session.
So if you're interested in the code for the quick contact sample, you will find it on the PMP samples. I provide here the URL to directly jump to the source code of this quick contact sample. As mentioned in during the webcast, we used S4G for everybody. This is a tool that is already also available on GitHub. This is what we use to make the SVG icons cross-browser compatible. And I recently wrote up a blog post on mainly focused on the design thing we did with the quick contacts. You will find it on my blog. And Walek did another great blog post where he described all the tools, the REST APIs and endpoints that we used, and how he built up from a development perspective the quick contacts.
Sounds good. And all of these links will be available, obviously, in the description of the video as well when you're watching this in a Channel 9 or whatever source. But we'll get the resources listed in the description and blog post around this webcast. Now, I think it's time to wrap up because we don't want to have a too long session. So thank you, Waldeck and Stefan. I think this is a great sample and shows the simplicity. And actually, what's interesting about the sample is that I can imagine that a lot of the customers and partners would be interested on actually using it as it is, because it is actually highly powerful as it is already as a sample. And then absolutely you're going to further enhance or start thinking, what else can we extend on the similar kind of thinking? But any last words from you guys?
Yeah, actually, to add to that, the code is available there, and there is also a step-by-step manual included, like how do you get the code running yourself. So if you're interested in that, go to the go to Git and give the code a try.
Absolutely. Thank you, Waldeck. And anything from your side, Stefan, still?
The last thing I like to say is to wrap up all this the things with Office UI Fabric, when you're building Office add-ins, it's really good to have such tools for developers that are not so familiar with front-end development to build something up pretty quick. But you always have to decide what really the use case of such tool is, and what actually the usage scenario is in when you build up applications.
Absolutely makes sense. Absolutely. Thank you, Stefan. But thank you both for joining, and we'll close up the call. So thank you everybody who's watching the video and listening the webcast, and we'll be coming back with a new one sooner or later.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.